certainly not from a concealed shield belt. A copper pin engraved with the likeness of a hare clasped the neck of Kynes's robe. Another smaller pin with similar likeness hung at the corner of the hood, which was thrown back over his shoulders. Halleck twisted in the seat beside Paul, reached back into the rear compartment, and brought out his balisset. Kynes looked around as Halleck tuned the instrument, then returned his attention to their course.
"What would you like to hear, young master?" Halleck asked.
"You choose, Gurney," Paul said. Halleck bent his ear close to the sounding board, strummed a chord, and sang softly,
"Our fathers ate manna in the desert, in the burning places where whirlwinds came. Lord, save us from that horrible land. Save us, oh, save us from the dry and thirsty land."
Kynes glanced at the Duke, said,
"You do travel with a light complement of guards, my lord. Are all of them such men of many talents?"
"Gurney?" The Duke chuckled. "Gurney's one of a kind. I like him with me for his eyes. His eyes miss very little."
The planetologist frowned. Without missing a beat in his tune, Halleck interposed,
"For I am like an owl of the desert, oh, I am like an owl of the desert."
The Duke reached down, brought up a microphone from the instrument panel, thumbed it to life, said,
"Leader to escort Gemma, flying object at 9 o'clock, Sector B. Do you identify it?"
"It's merely a bird," Kynes said, and added, "You have sharp eyes."
The panel speaker crackled, then,
"Escort Gemma, object examined under full amplification. It's a large bird."
Paul looked in the indicated direction, saw the distant speck, a dot of intermittent motion, and realized how keyed up his father must be. Every sense was at full alert.
"I'd not realized there were birds that large this far into the desert," the Duke said.
"That's likely an eagle," Kynes said. "Many creatures have adapted to this place."
The ornithopter swept over a bare rock plain. Paul looked down from their 2,000 meters altitude, saw the wrinkled shadow of their craft and escort. The land beneath seemed flat, but shadow wrinkles said otherwise.
"Has anyone ever walked out of the desert?" the Duke asked.
Halleck's music stopped. He leaned forward to catch the answer.
"Not from the deep desert," Kynes said. "Men have walked out of the second zone several times. They've survived by crossing the rock areas where worms seldom go."
The timbre of Kynes's voice held Paul's attention. He felt his senses come alert the way they were trained to do.
"Ah, the worms," the Duke said. "I must see one sometime."
"You may see one today," Kynes said. "Wherever there is spice, there are worms."
"Always?" Halleck asked.
"Always."
"Is there a relationship between worm and spice?" the Duke asked.
Kynes turned, and Paul saw the pursed lips as the man spoke.
"They defend spice sands. Each worm has a territory. As to the spice, who knows? Worm specimens we've examined lead us to suspect complicated chemical interchanges within them. We find traces of hydrochloric acid in the ducts, more complicated acid forms elsewhere. I'll give you my monograph on the subject."
"And a shield's no defense?" the Duke asked.
"Shields?" Kynes sneered. "Activate a shield within the worm zone, and you seal your fate. Worms ignore territory lines, come from far around to attack a shield. No man wearing a shield has ever survived such attack."
"How are worms taken, then?"
"High-voltage electrical shock applied separately to each ring segment is the only known way of killing and preserving an entire worm," Kynes said. "They can be stunned and shattered by explosives, but each ring segment has a life of its own. Barring atomics, I know of no explosive powerful enough to destroy a large worm entirely. They're incredibly tough."
"Why hasn't an effort been made to wipe them out?" Paul asked.
"Too expensive," Kynes said. "Too much area to cover."
Paul leaned back in his corner. His truth sense, awareness of tone shadings, told him that Kynes was lying and telling half-truths. And he thought, if there's a relationship between spice and worms, killing the worms would destroy the spice.
"No one will have to walk out of the desert soon," the Duke said. "Trip these little transmitters at our necks, and rescue is on its way. All our workers will be wearing them before long. We're setting up a special rescue service."
"Very commendable," Kynes said.
"Your tone says you don't agree," the Duke said.
"Agree? Of course I agree. But it won't be much use." Static electricity from sandstorms masks out many signals. Transmitters short out. They've been tried here before, you know. Arrakis is tough on equipment. And if a worm's hunting you, there's not much time. Frequently, you have no more than 15 or 20 minutes.
What would you advise? The Duke asked.
You ask my advice?
As planetologist, yes.
You'd follow my advice?
If I found it sensible.
Very well, my lord. Never travel alone.
The Duke turned his attention from the controls.
That's all?
That's all. Never travel alone.
What if you're separated by a storm and forced down? Halleck asked. Isn't there anything you could do?
Anything covers much territory, Kynes said.
What would you do? Paul asked.
Kynes turned a hard stare at the boy, brought his attention back to the Duke.
I'd remember to protect the integrity of my stillsuit. If I were outside the worm zone or in rock, I'd stay with the ship. If I were down in open sand, I'd get away from the ship as fast as I could. About 1,000 meters would be far enough. Then I'd hide beneath my robe. A worm would get the ship, but it might miss me.
Then what? Halleck asked.
Kynes shrugged.
Wait for the worm to leave.
That's all? Paul asked.
When the worm has gone, one may try to walk out, Kynes said. You must walk softly. Avoid drum sands, tidal dust basins. Head for the nearest rock zone. There are many such zones. You might make it.
Drum sand? Halleck asked.
A condition of sand compaction, Kynes said. The slightest step sets it drumming. Worms always come to that.
And a tidal dust basin? The Duke asked.
Certain depressions in the desert have filled with dust over the centuries. Some are so vast they have currents and tides. All will swallow the unwary who step into them.
Halleck sat back, resumed strumming the ballast. Presently he sang,
Wild beasts of the desert do hunt there, waiting for the innocents to pass. Oh, tempt not the gods of the desert, lest you seek a lonely epitaph. The perils of the...
He broke off, leaned forward. Dust cloud ahead, sire.
I see it, Gurney.
That's what we seek, Kynes said.
Paul stretched up in the seat to peer ahead, saw a rolling yellow cloud low on the desert surface some 30 kilometers ahead.
One of your factory crawlers, Kynes said. It's on the surface, and that means it's on spice. The cloud is vented sand being expelled after the spice has been centrifugally removed. There's no other cloud quite like it.
Aircraft over it, the Duke said.
I see 2, 3, 4 spotters, Kynes said. They're watching for worm sign.
Worm sign? The Duke asked.
A sand wave moving toward the crawler. They'll have seismic probes on the surface, too. Worms sometimes travel too deep for the wave to show.
Kynes swung his gaze around the sky.
Should be a carry-all wing around, but I don't see it.
The worm always comes, eh? Halleck asked.
Always.
Paul leaned forward, touched Kynes' shoulder.
How big an area does each worm stake out?
Kynes frowned. The child kept asking adult questions.
That depends on the size of the worm.
What's the variation? The Duke asked.
Big ones may control 300 or 400 square kilometers. Small ones...
He broke off as the Duke kicked on the jet brakes. The ship bucked as its tail pods whispered to silence. Stub wings elongated, cupped the air. The craft became a full thopter as the Duke banked it, holding the wings to a gentle beat, pointing with his left hand off to the east beyond the factory crawler.
Is that worm sign?
Kynes leaned across the Duke to peer into the distance. Paul and Halleck were crowded together, looking in the same direction, and Paul noted that their escort, caught by the sudden maneuver, had surged ahead, but now was curving back. The factory crawler lay ahead of them, still some 3 kilometers away. Where the Duke pointed, crescent dune tracks spread shadow ripples toward the horizon, and running through them as a level line stretching into the distance, came an elongated mountain motion, a cresting of sand. It reminded Paul of the way a big fish disturbed the water when swimming just under the surface.
Worm, Kynes said. Big one.
He leaned back, grabbed the microphone from the panel, punched out a new frequency selection. Glancing at the grid chart on rollers over their heads, he spoke into the microphone.
Calling crawler at Delta Ajax Niner. Worm sign warning. Crawler at Delta Ajax Niner. Worm sign warning. Acknowledge, please.
He waited.
The panel speaker emitted static crackles, then a voice. Who calls Delta Ajax Niner? Over?
They seem pretty calm about it, Halleck said.
Kynes spoke into the microphone.
Unlisted flight. North and east of you, about 3 kilometers. Worm sign is on intercept course. Your position. Estimated contact, 25 minutes.
Another voice rumbled from the speaker.
This is spotter control. Sighting confirmed. Stand by for contact fix.
There was a pause, then...
Contact in 26 minutes minus. That was a sharp estimate. Who's on that unlisted flight? Over.
Halleck had his harness off and surged forward between Kynes and the Duke.
Is this the regular working frequency, Kynes?
Yes. Why?
Who'd be listening?
Just the work crews in this area. Cuts down interference.
Again, the speaker crackled, then...
This is Delta Ajax Niner. Who gets bonus credit for that spot? Over.
Halleck glanced at the Duke. Kynes said,
There's a bonus based on spice load for whoever gives first worm warning. They want to know. Tell them who had first sight of that worm, Halleck said.
The Duke nodded. Kynes hesitated, then lifted the microphone.
Spotter credit to the Duke Leto Atreides. The Duke Leto Atreides. Over.
The voice from the speaker was flat and partly distorted by a burst of static.
We read and thank you.
Now tell them to divide the bonus among themselves, Halleck ordered. Tell them it's the Duke's wish.
Kynes took a deep breath, then...
It's the Duke's wish that you divide the bonus among your crew. Do you read? Over.
Acknowledged and thank you, the speaker said.
The Duke said,
I forgot to mention that Gurney is also very talented in public relations.
Kynes turned a puzzled frown on Halleck.
This lets the men know their Duke is concerned for their safety, Halleck said.
Word will get around.
It was on an area working frequency. Not likely Harkonnen agents heard.
He glanced out at their air cover.
And we're a pretty strong force. It was a good risk.
The Duke banked their craft toward the sand cloud erupting from the factory crawler.
What happens now?
There's a carry-all wing somewhere close, Kynes said. It'll come in and lift off the crawler.
What if the carry-all's wrecked? Halleck asked.
Some equipment is lost, Kynes said. Get in close over the crawler, my lord. You'll find this interesting.
The Duke scowled, busied himself with the controls as they came into turbulent air over the crawler. Paul looked down, saw sand still spewing out of the metal and plastic monster beneath them. It looked like a great tan and blue beetle, with many wide tracks extending on arms around it. He saw a giant inverted funnel snout poked into dark sand in front of it.
"Rich spice bed by the color," Kynes said. "They'll continue working until the last minute."
The Duke fed more power to the wings, stiffened them for a steeper descent as he settled lower in a circling glide above the crawler. A glance left and right showed his cover holding altitude and circling overhead. Paul studied the yellow cloud belching from the crawler's pipe vents, looked out over the desert at the approaching worm track.
"Shouldn't we be hearing them call in the carry-all?"
Halleck asked.
"They usually have the wing on a different frequency," Kynes said.
"Shouldn't they have 2 carry-alls standing by for every crawler?"
the Duke asked.
"There should be 26 men on that machine down there, not to mention cost of equipment."
Kynes said,
"You don't have enough
He broke off as the speaker erupted with an angry voice.
"Any of you see the wing? He isn't answering!"
A garble of noise crackled from the speaker, drowned in an abrupt override signal, then silence and the first voice.
"Report by the numbers. Over."
"This is spotter control. Last I saw, the wing was pretty high and circling off northwest. I don't see him now. Over."
"Spotter 1, negative. Over."
"Spotter 2, negative. Over."
"Spotter 3, negative. Over."
Silence. The Duke looked down. His own craft shadow was just passing over the crawler.
"Only 4 spotters, is that right?"
"Correct,"
Kynes said.
"There are 5 in our party," the Duke said.